Om Shri Sai Ram. Offer pranams at the lotus feet of my Lord Shri Satya Sai Baba. Revered elders, Sai brothers and sisters, loving Sai Rams to all of you. I am Dr. Jack Feely. It is my honor to be the National Council President, Satya Sai International Organization for the USA. And I bring you love from all your Sai brothers and sisters in the USA. I'm privileged to introduce our speaker this morning, Dr. Phil Goslin. Dr. Phil Goslin of the USA first came to Swami in 1971 and stayed with Swami for a year in India. He had many interactions with Bhagavan in those early years and has some amazing stories to share. He is currently zone chair of USA, Canada, West Indies, Suriname, and Guyana of the Satya Sai International Organization. He is one of the original USA Central Council members announced at the 1975 World Conference in the Divine Presence of Bhagavan, and he's held many senior positions. Dr. Goslin resides in Amherst, Massachusetts, near Boston, in the USA, where he is a clinical psychologist in private practice. He also previously worked in Wall Street for 12 years during the 1970s and 1980s. Brothers and sisters, please join me in giving Dr. Phil Goslin a warm welcome.
Om Sai Ram. My most heartfelt and humble pranams to our most beloved Lord. Distinguished guests, revered elders, dear Sai brothers and sisters, fellow pilgrims in this life. Sublimely awe-inspiring it is to be before the samadhi of our Lord, in the heart of his ashram, and before you all on this most beautiful day. For me personally, this is a most auspicious day. Perhaps Sai has given me the honor of addressing you all now because this week is my 50th anniversary of finding out about Swami. Well, it's of course more important what we do with our connection with Sai than how long we've known him. Sai makes use of our anniversaries as a way to connect us with him. This week, 50 years ago, Newsweek magazine had a beautiful article about Satya Sai. I was a college student looking for a guru. I was planning to come to India to become a yogi. In the following weeks after that article, I heard his name. And this is quite unusual. In 1969, almost nothing was known of Satya Sai in America. And those coincidences culminated the following month when my father, for Christmas, gave me a record album. He knew I had an interest in Indian spirituality. And in this little record store, he found this very rare record, Satya Sai Baba Chants the Bhajans. And I listened and listened to it, and particularly I was struck, Sri Kasturi was reading from things that Swami had said about himself in volumes 4 and 5 of Satya Sai Speaks. And one of the things that he said was, I have come to drive evil back into the jungle. And I thought, this is unusual. I was used to seeing gurus were first starting to come to America, and they would come to New York, and I would rush to see them. And they would mostly describe these powerful meditations. If you do the meditation I prescribe for you, you'll get the following visions. But that wasn't what Swami was like. He was into something totally different, something much, much larger, and I was deeply attracted. So there are many stories about coming to Swami. It took me about a year to get here. After I had graduated from college, I knew I didn't have time for a career or whatever, so I drove a taxi just to generate the income to be able to come here. And the last night I drove a taxi, the week before I came here, two young fellows got in the car, and I thought, this might be a robbery. And sure enough, it was. And the fellow held a knife to my throat. And I had on the front of the taxi, on the dashboard, a little puja table. And I told him, you can have all the money, but I just started the evening. There's very little money. And he said, there better be more. And I could sort of feel the knife start to pull a little bit. And I looked at the puja table and I said, this isn't how this is supposed to end. And fortunately, at that moment, two giant guys with drawn 45 guns jumped in the taxi, jumped on one of the robbers, and basically caught the other robber also. And it turned out they were undercover policemen. And with their drawn guns, I thought it was a rival gang. So Swamiji saved me, and I managed to come here. So when I first came here, we knew so little about Swami. We had no idea what the sadhana was. And as a matter of fact, when I arrived here, it was as though we had landed on a different planet. And I remember coming that first morning in Whitefield, and it was just before most of the people had come. And there was someone there that I recognized from New York, another would-be yogi. And he was sitting in the sun, and he was silent, and he motioned for me to sit down next to him. And I thought, well, maybe that's where the sadhana is here. You're supposed to sit in the sun and be silent. And 1 hour would go by, 2 hours would go by, Swami didn't come out. And I'm thinking, this is a very difficult sadhana. Fortunately, someone came and said, come, get out of the sun. But we were still mystified what the sadhana was. We had our own self-glorifying ideas. For instance, I thought I was good at Hatha Yoga, and I thought Hatha Yoga might be a path. But Swami would undercut that. He told me, Hatha Yoga is just temporary. Okay, so that's another thing gone. And so some of the young Westerners would think, meditation, it must be the path of meditation. And they would be asking Swami for special meditation. And Swami would very rarely respond, or he would respond in a very offhand way, like, oh, meditation, it's a good way to pass the time till one comes to love. And we couldn't really understand that. We couldn't understand the simplicity of his teachings. And so we wanted these exotic practices that we had read about in books, these sort of adventurous go to India and become enlightened. And Swami seemed alternately amused and appalled by our ignorance. He'd tease us. In those days, Swami was starting to get a little bit of white hair in his hair. And he would pull on his hair and he'd say, see, young Westerners coming here 1 year, 2 years. Swami's hair already half white. And some months later, his hair became all black again. And so we sort of were looking, what happened? And he said, oh, the students didn't like it, so I changed it back. So over the years, Swami has taken us individually and as a group, step by step, into the fields of service and education. As we've matured, he's given us more and more sadhana that's unfolding in terms of an expansion is our life, expanding our hearts. A key component for the devotees outside of India in this transition from I to we is the Satya Sai International Organization. Around the world, there are more than 1,800 centers in 120 countries in every continent except Antarctica. Many governments have recognized the value of Satya Sai education and human values and have asked all teachers to be trained in EHV in such places as Barbados, Thailand, El Salvador. There are 44 Satya Sai schools around the world. And there's also the World Sai Global Health Services, which has served over 141,000 patients in the last year in 32 countries. One interesting medical camp, active medical camp, is in Kazakhstan. And they see more than 3,000 patients a year. And this is called the Sairam Medical Camp. And it's called the Sairam Medical Camp not only in honor of our Swami's services, but that is the name of the city, is Sairam, and it refers to a saint from many, many generations ago. So it's interesting to be able to travel to Sairam. So Swami is seen in many places around the world, in both in China and Mexico. In China, a school principal reported to the devotees had shown him pictures of Satya Sai. And later they came back and he said, oh, your boss came here. he spoke to us. And the same experience with a security guard in Mexico. He had seen the pictures of Sai in the building and later reported, oh, yes, your boss came here and he spoke to me. So Sai is everywhere, more and more everywhere with us, in us, around us. One of the programs that we're developing in honor of the upcoming World Conference next year, Swami's 95th birthday, is an adoption of 95 communities around the world, just as you're adopting villages in India. So we're starting to do that in around the world also. And already more than 95 have been adopted, and many more are happening. In all countries, preparations for the 2020 World Conference have commenced with pre-World Conferences with a theme, Unity is Divinity, Purity is Enlightenment. How uplifting as it is to be here and to be part of this organization, to be surrounded by such examples of dedication, devotion, selfless service. This is the best of good company, the best of satsang, for which we thank you all. Sai has left us all the talents and resources amongst ourselves. Our job is to connect all of those resources personally and as an organization and around the world. I'd also like to share several favorite memories from being here. You know how Swami says, when I'm with 10 men, I'm a man. And when I'm with 10 women, I'm a woman. Being here to the Mandir, being next to the Mandir, revives a divine memory of Swami at Onam, 1971. In those days, the back balcony of the Mandir was open and facing what's now South Prashanti. And gathered there were about 50 ladies from Kerala. And Swami was in his Krishna mode, and he was on the balcony. And he had these saris, and he was sort of teasing the people about the saris. Do you want this sari? And so he would look at one woman, and then with a flick of his wrist, he would fire it to a woman over there. And it was so beautiful, because then the women would be running from there over to here, and Swami would be laughing, and we'd all be laughing, and I would be watching from a distance. And it was so extraordinary, Krishna with the gopis, but also there was something very, very athletic about Swami. You know, not only could he look in one direction and throw another thing, but he would throw with just the flick of his wrist, such a powerful throw, it would be like a rocket coming right off directly to that person, and the person would be startled, and the sari would thump right to them. Also, I wanted to remember, after my heart was first captured by Satya Sai, I wrote everyone back in the U.S. that the Lord of the universe has come, and you absolutely must come to see him. No doubt many of you have had the same experiences. When we have this early enthusiasm, we want to tell everyone, we want to share with everyone. And most of them are not quite so interested. It's quite a rough moment. But fortunately, over the following year, several of my family members did come and had very wonderful experiences. And my best friend from high school also came. And you have to understand, he was just graduated from college. And he was a very muscular college athlete. He was very, very a big track and field star, very muscular. And after he had been here a couple of days, we were invited into Treyi Vrindavan for a special evening bhajan, at the end of which Swami gave a piece of fruit to each person. And so he gave this person a piece of fruit, and this person, and this person. But my friend didn't really understand. He was bewildered by India. He'd only been here a few days, and he didn't understand Swami, and he wasn't sure what his relationship was, so he was hanging back a little bit. So he was a little bit like this. He was sort of back a little bit, a little shy with Swami. And so Swami pretends to not see him, and Swami walks by, and then Swami, out of the corner of his eye, he sort of makes this motion like, and then Swami kind of sidles back. My friend is like this, and Swami comes back like this. Swami's become a muscular college athlete. He's like two muscular guys standing there. And Swami takes this banana. My friend's hand is out like this, and Swami takes the banana. With a flick of his wrist, whaps it into the fellow's hand. It was like slap. This powerful shot of this banana happens. And so it was a funny moment. And so we all went back. We were living in these pump houses in the marigold fields behind Katagodi. And then we got together again the next morning before morning darshan. And I asked my friend, I said, "That was some wonderful evening. Don't you think it was so incredible?" He said, "Yes, it was so amazing. The energy was so intense. I stayed up all night." Of course, after I ate the banana, I ate the peel too. So I tell people, the lesson in this world is you don't have to eat the whole thing. But the intensity of how Swami was with us, it was just over-awesomening. So, as we know, Sai exists and operates on so many levels. It may be valuable to revisit some of them. No doubt there are infinite more, but these are ones that come to mind. Perhaps it's useful to recollect and reflect on these in your own life. We all know the external Sai. This was the Sai that walked among us. He was the friend. He was the very stern taskmaster. He was the playful child. He was the great king. There was also the astral Sai Baba, the one that appears in dreams and appears in multiple locations around the world. And there's the miraculous Sai, the one that could turn sky into earth, the divine healer. And then, of course, there's Sai, the guru and the greatest teacher, and his reflection, the inner Sai that we all carry, the voice within, our own conscience. And then there's the Sai, the one who receives all the prayers, the object of all religions, the Lord himself. Then, as Swami says, there's how the universe operates, like an automatic switch that drives the universe. As the phrase from English poetry says, the fuse that drives the flower, that's our Swami. And finally, science concurs with spirituality that this world is an illusion. Science tells us that this outer world is a glittering patina, a shimmer of electrons that are met by our vision. To our eyes, it is all very colorful, spectacular, attractive, compelling, seemingly very solid, very solid. But is it? Underneath this shimmer, science tells us, is a vast empty space. There's an empty space. We, however, can know this vast, unnamed, all-permeating mystery as God or as Sai. We're really swimming in a sea of Sai. It reminds us of the sacred words, this is full, that is full. When the full is taken from the full, only the full remains. We sing, Sai, you are Guru, God and Self. When we come to the end of our sadhana, Sai is our self. We are Sai, and there is only Sai. So, how do we fully recognize and appreciate, nurture and exalt all of these aspects of Sai in our life? From Sai Speaks, 1972, Swami says, I am advising you to garner and treasure all the grace and all the bliss you can, well you may, so that you can sustain yourselves ruminating on the sweetness of the memories and the experience. Let's gather all the good that's happened and all that will happen for us. Let's remember with gratitude. Let's have right vision to see all the good all around us. Let's have the openness to the myriad ways that Sai might show himself in whatever way, mundane or miraculous. On the route from I to we have a fascination with the drama of our own personal story. But Swami is telling us to leave that behind. As a psychologist, I see people that get tangled up in their own drama. They take it so seriously that it just tangles them up. Sai, in his grace, nicely solves this for us. From 1961, when you listen to my story, you forget the story of the world and live only in my story until there's no separate story for you to relate. To make you storyless is the purpose of my story. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, there's often talk of the Jews as God's chosen people. Unsurprisingly, Jewish devotees from America have taken the opportunity to ask Swami, are the Jews the chosen people. Swami's reply for them, and actually it's a reply for all of us, those who choose God are the chosen ones. So, as many of the pilgrims here now return to the outer world, we have hope that Swami blesses them to keep in mind the adage, having gone to Parthi, never leave there. This means always keeping Parthi and Sai in your heart. I close with a quote from the devotional poet Kabir, which emphasizes the fondest wish for all our relations with Sai. Since the day I met my Lord, there has been no end to the sport of our love. I see with eyes open and smile and behold his beauty everywhere. I utter his name, and whatever I see reminds me of him. Whatever I do becomes his worship. Wherever I go, I move round him. All I achieve is his service. And when I lie down, I lie prostrate at his feet. Whether I rise or sit, I can never forget him, for his music rings in my ears. Swamiji, may we become worthy of Sai. Thanking you, Swamiji, for all your blessings. May God bless you all. Jai Sai Ram. Jai Sai Ram. Jai Sai Ram.
Thank you, sir, for sharing your wonderful experiences with Bhagwan. One of the traditions, culture of Prashant Nilayam, nurtured by our beloved Bhagwan, was the arrival of our beloved Lord for Darshan used to always be accompanied by a beautiful piece of lilting music, which would transport the minds of all the devotees to the realm of serenity and bliss. We are about to listen to one such chosen instrument of Bhagwan, who was blessed to play Veena for several years at Prashanti Nilayam in the 1980s, when Bhagwan used to come out for darshan. This morning, we have Dr. Durjati Mudigonda offering a Veena recital at Bhagwan's Divine Lotus Feet. Hailing from a family of devotees, blessed with music, his grandfather, Sri Sadashivaya, was a well-known Carnatic musician. Dr. Durjati's father, Professor Veerabhadraya Mudigonda, who was also blessed to play Veena in front of Bhagwan, was his first teacher. During Dr. Durjati's stay here at Prashanti Nilayam, as a student of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanti Nilayam campus, from 1982, to 1989, he had a unique privilege to play Veena when Bhagwan came out for darshan almost every day. On numerous one-to-one sessions with Bhagwan, Swami taught Dr. Durjati various technical nuances of playing Veena along with teaching him the intricacies of ragas. That way, he is extremely blessed to have received direct training from Bhagwan himself. During his stay here at Prashanti Nilayam, he had the rare opportunity to accompany world-renowned artists like Srimati M.S. Subbalakshmi, Srimati Sushila, Srimati Leela, and Mr. Maynard Ferguson. Dr. Durjati currently resides in Columbus, Ohio, United States of America, working as a scientist in new product development, even as he spreads Swami's love by giving performances in various spiritual events across North America. This morning, he'll be accompanied by two of our faculty members from the Department of Music, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Sri Sairam S. on Tabla, Assistant Professor and Head Department of Music, and Sri Sai Dutt on Mridangam. Please welcome Dr. Durjati Mudigonda and his team of fellow musicians. Jai Sai Ram.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. समस्त लोका सुखिनो भवन्तु समस्त लोका सुखिनो भवन्तु समस्त लोका सुखिनो भवन्तु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः जय